This is Nick Hutt, Managing Editor with HFMA. In this episode of Voices in Healthcare Finance, you'll hear an interview with Craig Standen of our sponsor, SEI, about various financial issues that are affecting health systems. First up is my interview with Jennifer Carney, who's Vice President of Finance and Analytics with Beth Israel Deaconess Care Organization, also known as BIDCO. We sat down at HFMA's annual conference after her presentation on unlocking the power of analytics for data-driven care. Jennifer, starting off with a general question, how can healthcare analytics be deployed to enhance care delivery?
So we found that the best way to apply healthcare analytics is in a focused, prescriptive manner. Mm-hmm. There's three key ingredients in order to have prescriptive analytics that become useful in driving care management and transitions of care. Infrastructure, having a solid foundation for your data. Engagement is the second, and having providers be able to use the data in a meaningful way to drive change. And then finally, measurement, knowing the programs that you've put into place, if they're staying on track and you're able to reach your goals, that constant measurement of where you're going.
So what types of results has BIDCO seen from the meaningful utilization of healthcare analytics?
So when we started with our infrastructure building and aggregation of clinical and claims data, we were at the time in the Pioneer arrangement, accountable care organization with CMS, and we were able to see improvement in quality measures almost immediately. We nearly doubled the rate of performing fall risk assessments. We improved the rate of our Pioneer patients with diabetes who have blood sugar levels in good control. And we tripled the number of patients who received screenings for depression symptoms using a standard tool to assess mental health status. Now we're in the phase of implementing, and we have made great success in implementing a population health tool where we're able to harness all of the data that we've aggregated. And we've really seen gains with our providers, better understanding their patient population, and they're giving them the ability to develop more effective interventions in care management.
So certainly those are very impressive and meaningful results. On the flip side, what are some of the challenges that you had to overcome in optimizing the use of healthcare analytics? And how did you overcome those challenges?
So the first I would talk about is with data aggregation. Mm-hmm. We are a complex system with many different EHRs. We do not have one record of care across our system. And aggregating that clinical data together is challenging. As you know, there's no standardization across the EHRs. There's unstructured fields. We even found that practices were storing information in the free text notes section. So that was the first challenge that we overcome, was standardizing that data. It was a long process, an iterative process, working with the practices to first map the data into the system, then normalize the data, and finally validate that with the practices to make sure that the information that was flowing once we connected all of the different systems together, that we were getting quality information flowing into our common data set. The second challenge, I think, in building out analytics is around communication. Once we had all of the information and that rich clinical information flowing into BIDCO, it's something I think about a lot is to make sure that we're sharing that information out to the practices. And we created the role of the performance improvement facilitator a few years ago in order to do that, really creating one point of contact for our practice staff and our physicians to link into BIDCO, answer all the questions, be able to bring out the reports and the analytics and describe those in detail to the physicians and help them know what the next steps are in order to see success in the programs that they're creating.
And so that was a dedicated position that you created just for that very purpose?
That's right.
Okay.
To facilitate that communication.
Based on your experiences, how would you suggest applying analytics to value-based care, specifically to optimizing an organization's performance, a contractual performance?
I think the key is to provide analytics that are focused and directive. We at BIDCO are in many value-based payment arrangements for commercial, Medicare, and Medicaid populations. No two contracts are the same. The metrics are different. The incentives and the levers are different across all of them.
Sure.
It's a tremendous amount of information There's so much data that we have, it can be overwhelming. So the role of analytics is to turn that data into value. And we do that through providing focused and directive analytics that helps the physicians and the practices know, who should I outreach to? What's my next step? How do I read through all of this data and know the action I'm supposed to take next that's going to help me meet my goals and drive performance?
It's all about making it actionable, isn't it?
That's right.
What are optimal sources of healthcare data? And I'm sure there's some that maybe providers overlook that, you know, would be really good for them to be aware of.
Yeah, we hear a lot about that in, you know, the disruption of healthcare and consumerism in healthcare. And the sources of data relevant to healthcare providers and analytics are changing rapidly. We're no longer able to just rely on looking at claims data and doing descriptive analytics and talking about what happened in the past. We have to, you know, pull in more relevant information. I think some of the new sources that are coming onto the scene are even patient-reported, whether it's genomic data or information from the Fitbit that you're wearing that's or a home device that's tracking your vitals. This is all information that's going to be becoming more and more useful. For BidCo, one of the latest pieces of information that we've been able to pull together into our aggregated data set is scheduling information. We had claims and clinical aggregated, and now we have the scheduling information. So it really enables our population health tool to provide a full side-by-side picture of all of the pieces of information needed to promote care management. And it becomes much more relevant when looking at a patient and seeing their gaps in care or their opportunities for improved acuity documentation to know when their next visit is and whether or not they need to be outreached to or if they're already scheduled to come in next week and they can be flagged for intervention.
Thank you for that. That was great insight. What type of infrastructure would you say allows a provider to best utilize some of these sources of data?
Yeah, historically, we've had care management, population health, and analytics, each conducted on an independent system and a different platform.
Right.
That presented a lot of challenge. We have moved in the past year to a new platform that allows all of those tracks to access and drive off of the same data set. Having that single source of truth for data has really helped us. Our next evolution of the tool, since again, I mentioned we're a diverse network, we have many different EHRs in use across our system. Our next evolution of our population health tool is a desktop module that will allow users, regardless of what EHR system they're in, to access the data that we have aggregated in our data set. On their desktop, and they can see all of the claims information, the clinical information, whether or not it's coming out of their system, results when their scheduling is set, all right there on their desktop.
As far as dashboards and other tools to assess healthcare analytics, provide the metrics that you need to, you know, evaluate where you are and where you want to go, what can you say about just what types of tools would come in handy in that aspect?
Dashboards can be a great tool, both for measurement and again, communication is key. We talked about engaging providers, and dashboards are one of the ways that you can do that in a visual way. You can pack a lot of information into a dashboard, and there's different types that we use. One would be presenting an overall picture that helps us to identify areas of opportunity when we show trends for different metrics. Whether it's med-surg admissions or readmissions by DRG, we're looking for trends and opportunities of where we need to drill down further and where might we want to create an intervention or a program to address a negative trend. We also use dashboarding when we think about incenting providers and employing behavioral economics. We create dashboards that use some of those techniques and rank social ranking to show providers where they stand against each other in terms of quality performance, for example. We found that those are helpful as well in encouraging engagement from the physicians.
That sounds like a very comprehensive but also very simple and straightforward set of tools.
Yeah, and it's great. I think one of the barriers that we find in measurement is that there is a lag. A lot of this is we'll be measuring success in a program a year later or when the claims come in, you know, a significant amount of time has passed. So we also want to make sure that we're providing dashboards and metrics that are process measures. These can help us to know along the way, are our operational processes working? So we think we're going to hit our goals down the line. And we track that if we see things going off the rails, we know we need to make an adjustment to our programs.
Well, Jennifer, thank you. This has been really terrific insight. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share? This is such an important topic, really just the whole transition to value-based care. We saw the importance of it just in the turnout for your presentation and the rest of the cohort track that your presentation was a part of.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll keep in mind, and we've heard this a lot through all of the presentations today, that the healthcare analytics is changing rapidly, and we're doing the best we can to keep up with that and bring in new sources of data and be part of that evolution in driving change and seeking out performance in our value-based payment arrangements.
Very good. Jennifer, thank you again for your time. We really appreciate it. And thank you for being a part of our annual conference.
Great. Thank you, Nick.
In our next interview, Betty Hinch, senior editor with HFMA, interviewed Craig Stanton of SEI at HFMA's annual conference. SEI sponsored HFMA's podcasting studio at the conference. Craig is part of SEI's institutional group and serves as director of healthcare advice.
Craig, welcome to HFMA's Voices in Healthcare podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Craig, can you discuss some of the external forces that are changing how health systems operate?
Sure. There's no shortage of external forces that are kind of constantly at play impacting the healthcare sector. I think some of the larger, more impactful ones might be including declining Medicare reimbursement with certainly the risk of material cuts in the future. The House budget proposal for fiscal 19 looks to try and balance the budget by 2027, and that would include approximately $8.1 trillion in cuts, including more than a $530 billion reduction in Medicare spending over the next 10 years. State Medicaid programs are certainly stressed out. Included in the budget proposal is approximately $1.5 trillion of proposed cuts to Medicaid spending, and also the transition from block grants may affect coverage as well as eligibility. The proliferation of high deductible, high copay plans is certainly impactful on hospitals' finances. Certainly, they offer the potential for lower premiums, but also provide lower coverage in most cases, which results in a cost shift to hospitals, probably the federal government as well, and likely the broader population due to rising bad debt levels. There's been a recent executive order which allowed for the expansion of association health plans, which is certainly designed to broaden the availability and access to health care. But one of the unintended consequences may be that it might further disrupt the ACA marketplaces, which could result in increased premiums. And then certainly a lot of press around disruptive forces and new participants. So CVS has made a proposed acquisition of Aetna. You've got Optum, which is part of United Healthcare, which is certainly buying more physician practices, which could change care delivery patterns for those organizations. And Walmart has made inroads or designs to potentially acquire Humana. So you've got these organizations which would not be seen as directly linked to healthcare, which have the financial ability and heft to potentially come in and be disruptors within the healthcare sector and provide more head-to-head competition to hospitals. Continued movement from fee-for-service to value-based reimbursement is certainly a journey that hospitals have been on for a number of years. Hospitals are developing competencies, systems, and processes to assume more risk and hopefully profit from this shift. And then there's also just broader rising costs in the form of higher pharmaceutical costs and medical devices and certainly staffing costs, because we know that there's shortages in a number of different areas, including nurses in particular. So those are some of the external forces. There's certainly a lot more that are impacting, but those are just some that come to mind. And also there's key decisions that are being made about how to finance these initiatives. So the tax-exempt debt markets have been very favorable and remain so, even though rates have risen over the last number of months. But hospitals have been consciously deleveraging their balance sheets, mainly since the financial crisis, just to kind of put themselves in a better financial foot. Also, along with that, strong investment markets have certainly helped strengthen and grow balance sheets, which have provided hospitals and systems with some more financial flexibility. And investment returns on those growing balance sheet assets have provided critical sources of support as margins continue to be stressed, as reimbursement levels continue to be reduced. From our standpoint, it's really important to align the risk-return profile of your investment program with the broader strategic goals and initiatives and, quite frankly, constraints of your organization. And at least at SEI, we do that through an enterprise risk management framework, which allows for really a holistic approach to developing investment program strategy by taking into account a set of broader enterprise risks that reside within hospitals and health systems, and what we believe supports more informed decision-making.
Investment management is one facet of complex decision-making for a hospital or health system. What is the importance of investment management to a healthcare system? And are there reasons why a system would want to partner with an experienced provider for investment management services as opposed to doing it themselves?
Sure. I mean, the importance of putting in place a well-structured investment program, or I should say allocation strategy for your investment program, really can't be overstated. I mean, each of these hospitals and health systems has various pools that reside either on or off balance sheet. So the on balance sheet pools might be board designated, unrestricted, an affiliated foundation, self-insurance reserves or captives, and then the off balance sheet might be in the form of a defined benefit pension plan. But each one of those pools has its own distinct set of risks, as well as its own purpose and role and objective for those pools. There's certainly a growing number of increasingly complex investment products that could be used as asset allocation building blocks, and so it's really important to be able to have access to resources externally, as well as have a good, competent kind of investment committee and board structure that can effectively evaluate those different building blocks that might go into the allocation strategy. Should we have more in return-enhancing or return-seeking asset classes or less? And how is that determined? And by and large, an outsourced fiduciary management firm like an SEI can bring decades of kind of experience evaluating managers. We've got a team internally that all they do is evaluate different managers, but we can also bring, these types of firms can bring broader diversification. And in many cases, you can drive down manager costs as well. In SEI in particular, we've got over $335 billion under management, and so we can take those dollars to market to contract directly with third-party sub-advisors that then drives down those costs to our clients. So driving down their overall costs for their investment management program can contribute to higher returns. And I know that certainly CFOs are looking for ways to kind of rationalize their cost structure. So that's just a different way to approach that. And the other thing is, it helps leverage in the best manner the time and talents of the board members who are volunteering their time to serve on those boards. They're committed volunteer individuals from the community, but by and large, a lot of those times, they might not necessarily have the investment or financial acumen to be able to adequately evaluate what makes a good manager or what makes a bad manager. So with the capabilities of an outsourced fiduciary management firm, we can help kind of support that better decision making on what constitutes, one, the optimal strategic asset allocation, and two, take that responsibility of hiring and firing managers out from the board and get them focused on what's the best strategic asset allocation. So those are a couple of points on really, hopefully, what constitutes a really the importance around investment management and the programs.
Great. Let's talk a bit about SEI's healthcare client base. Do SEI's healthcare clients fall into a certain profile?
So SEI has about 45 clients, all nonprofit hospital systems and hospitals around the country, that represent approximately $16 billion of assets under management. And these hospitals range across the size and the credit spectrum, so small community hospitals up to large multi-state health systems that are very complex organizations. And for probably 50 to 60% of our clients, we manage more than one pool of assets. So those board pools or the foundation or a DB pension plan, in many cases, we'll manage across those different pools to to really what are the distinct goals and objectives and constraints of each of those different pools. We are actually the largest OCIO provider to the healthcare sector, and we've actually been peer reviewed by the HFMA for the last number of years, and we're the only OCIO to be peer reviewed, so we're very proud of that distinction. I wouldn't say that they fall into a particular size category, because as I mentioned, they do span the size and the credit spectrums. And each one of them has kind of come to SEI for various sets of reasons. Example, we've got a large Midwest multi-state healthcare system where we manage a board pool, foundation, multiple pensions, and self-insurance pools. And we actually came through that relationship through actually their acquisition of a existing client. Another example would be a large suburban hospital in the Midwest where we manage board pools, foundations, pensions, self-insurance, as well as we provide oversight and management of their defined contribution assets. And then smaller community hospital out on the West Coast where they just have a board pool and an affiliated foundation that have each their own distinct goals and objectives for those pools. But what we try to do is provide the same level of in analyses, kind of diligence and oversight for each of those clients, regardless of whether the large multi-state health systems or the small community hospitals, because those decisions are equally important across those organizations.
What are some of the circumstances that led some of your healthcare clients to select SEI?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there was a large multi-state health system that we work with in the Midwest, and they had worked with a consultant previous to their acquisition of our existing client, which is a community hospital in the Midwest. And at that point, they, I don't know if it was kind of at the same time, or but they made the conscious decision to kind of reevaluate their model that they were then operating under. And they looked at the consultant model, and they looked at the outsourced fiduciary management, or OCIO model, and evaluated a number of different firms. And they ended up selecting SEI One because we had been fortunate to have good outcomes and provided a good client experience to that organization that they had acquired, but they just felt that the model supported what they intended to do as a system in terms of growing the system, and it supported their desire to focus on execution of their strategy for delivering healthcare services versus having to worry about building out a fully formed investment staff or something like that. In fact, I talked to the treasurer after that whole process went through, and he said, we're a hospital system, we deliver healthcare services, we have a balance sheet that supports that endeavor, and we were looking to partner with an organization that really understood our business and then could bring the investment expertise to bear that would really support us reaching our goals and objectives. Another example is, two hospital system in the Midwest that went through a change process very soon after they did a consolidation where these two organizations came together under a new parent corporation. Each of the individual hospitals that came together had a consultant that they worked with previously, but they made the decision that they wanted to just reevaluate at this kind of flex point or change point in their organization on whether or not they had the right models in place under this new structure. And they looked at OCIOs, they looked at consultants, and it came back that the CFO and the board collectively agreed that they wanted to focus on operational strategy execution given the complexities of bringing these two organizations together. Plus, another consideration was that they now inherited exposure to a DB plan that they previously didn't have exposure to through this acquisition. So they wanted an organization that ultimately was SEI that had that expertise along with the ability to look holistically across this organization and help them come up with the right investment strategies that would benefit them over the long term.
Great. How does SEI view risk-return profile when designing investment strategy?
Well, developing the investment strategy, there's a couple of different kind of entry points to that. But before we put pen to paper to start talking about or start developing allocation that might be options, allocation strategy might be options for those organizations, we work very hard to understand them organizationally, financially, strategically, where they've been historically, financially, where they see the business going, what are some of the constraints, what are some of the unknowns for their business, how much support do they need from the pools to help them execute and achieve their strategic goals. And then that's when we start to think about asset allocation strategies. But another key input is, what's the risk tolerance of the organization? So there's a clear distinction between an organization's ability and their willingness to assume risk. And sometimes those two things diverge. And so we have to kind of reconcile those through really in-depth discussions with the management team and the board governance committee as we kind of work through that process of bringing a client on board and helping understand what they're trying to achieve, how we need to help them get there, and then what risk they are willing to take to achieve those goals. So there's certainly a lot of factors that go into developing the asset allocation strategy, but we work with them on education on the different building blocks that we might use to build those strategies, why that makes sense. We certainly take their input on whether or not they feel it's organizationally appropriate. And at the end of the day, it's their investment strategy, but our job is to present to them the widest range of options that would allow them to meet their goals, and then help them make more informed decisions with kind of really in-depth analyses to support the risk-return profile that we might propose for them.
Mm-hmm. What should decision makers evaluate if they're looking to use an OCIO for investment management?
You know, every organization has their own organizationally appropriate construct for deciding which type of model they want to use and then which organization they would want to use within each of those models. We're not saying one is better, one is worse. It's just in terms of consultants or going on your own and doing your own, it's just what is felt to be organizationally appropriate. From our standpoint, the outsourced fiduciary management or OCIO model help support informed decision making, can help drive down manager costs through leveraging economies of scale, can provide some additional analytical support and help kind of leverage what the finance team is doing internally. But at the end of the day, what they choose to do and which model those organizations choose to go with is really deemed to be organizationally appropriate for them. What I can say is that the amount of assets that are managed in an OCIO framework have doubled over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And they're projected to double in the next 5 years. So that's pretty substantial. So that's telling you that the market is moving in this direction, because the market is looking for those firms that can provide services that give additional fiduciary oversight and, quite frankly, support for those board members that are volunteering their time in the committee. But that then can allow those hospitals and health systems to leverage the external strengths that those organizations like outsourced chief or CIOs can bring to bear to help them achieve their goals kind of under a stressed operating environment. Kind of anecdotally, there was a survey that was done early part of last year by Cerulli and Associates that talked to a number of different hospitals and health systems, and some of the questions dealt with what are some of their concerns around the operating environment, as well as specifically under investment management. You know, which direction do you think you're going to be going, or how do you view your investment portfolio and some of the benefits and considerations around that? A large number of those respondents said that they viewed an outsourced model as something that they would either evaluate or move toward over the next number of years. Again, that kind of supports the broader view and data that shows that assets are moving into an outsourced model. And the other point is, a lot of organizations on the investment management side that have been traditional consultants are actually now offering outsourced sort of models. So it tells you that they're recognizing where the market is going and moving in that direction. SEI has been doing this for 25 years in this model. So we've been an outsourced chief investment officer for 25 years. We got the longest track record doing that, and we're one of the largest in the market. So back to your point about what are some of the points that you need to ask. What sort of track record does the organization have? Do they understand not only investments, but the healthcare sector, and how decisions on operations and strategy impact decisions on investments, and then how to structure the investment allocation strategies to best support achieving those goals and objectives? I think those are key determinants. I mentioned track record of the organization and kind of duration offering this type of service. That's important as well. And is your investment strategy aligned with your broader goals and objectives, and also takes into account the risks that are present across the organization? When I talk about risks, you've got investment program that has different pools that have different risk return profiles. You've got a capital structure that has its own set of risks, so different types of debt that you might have outstanding. Are you exposed to capital market variances there? You've got operations which have variability associated with them, and so you have certain financial goals, but you might also need support from the investment pools to help you achieve those goals. And then if you have a defined benefit pension plan with contribution strategies and variability around that, which impacts the balance sheet, that's also going to play into that. So that gets to that concept of enterprise risks and different points that at least we feel are really important to evaluate and take into account when you develop allocation strategies. So is your strategy aligned with that risk return profile that's present across your organization? If it's not, then we certainly would encourage taking a step back and ensuring that strategy for the investments kind of dovetails with what you're trying to achieve more broadly as an organization. And those are important determinants.
Thank you. Craig, I want to thank you very much for sharing these details and strategies with our listeners.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. We appreciate it.
SEI is the largest outsourced fiduciary management firm, also known as OCIO, to healthcare organizations, with a team of professionals focused on creating custom investment strategies for each of your asset pools, including operating pools, foundations, and pension plans. We are an HFMA peer-reviewed provider with over $15 billion in healthcare assets under management and over 25 years of experience serving our institutional clients exclusively as an OCIO. Our time-tested approach focuses on aligning the investment strategy with organizational goals, objectives, and risk tolerance as quantified through an in-depth enterprise risk analysis. This approach, combined with our demonstrated expertise as an OCIO, better aligns investment decision-making with organizational objectives and enables our clients to focus on their broader financial strategy. To learn more about SEI, please visit us at www.seic.com/healthcare.
You've been listening to the Voices in Healthcare Finance podcast. For more information about these and other topics, visit hfma.org.